Society and its values are constantly evolving, but discrimination or prejudice against individuals with disability still exists, even in portrayals of persons with disability in the media. Dr. Kathleen Brilla is a university lecturer and filmmaker and has been exploring the stereotyping of persons with disability in the media. And Dr. Brilla joins me now for part three of our series. Now, last time out, we talked about stereotypes of disability in the media, in particular, the supercrip stereotype. Now, the question is it possible to challenge stereotypes if they are fundamental mechanisms of our brain? Dr. Brilla, welcome.
Hi, Simon. Thank you for having me back.
Now, why do filmmakers use stereotypes then when portraying disabled people?
Well, filmmaking and storytelling textbooks used in universities or courses, they usually encourage filmmakers to use very emotion-driven narratives with a lot of conflict, tragedy, or tension. And this is supposed to guarantee that a film resonates with a mainstream audience. This is quite normal because our brain is hardwired to perceive the world in narratives, as we discussed in a previous episode. And in terms of human evolution, we are much more responsive to conflict and tension. It's simply a natural survival mechanism. So the problem is not that media, art, or literature use these narrative formulas in general. The problem is when disability is placed at the center of these stories as being the main cause for a conflict or a tension that the character has to overcome. Disability scholar Tom Shakespeare calls this a lazy shortcut for writers and producers. And this laziness basically means that disabled people aren't worth making a film about unless it is about their disability. And this goes back to what we discussed previously about social boundaries created by an in-group towards an out-group in order to maintain and validate their own identity. So in this case, non-disabled people regard disabled people only through their disability, as this is the defining binary difference between the two groups.
Can you just reiterate as well what is an in-group and what's an out-group?
So in-group and out-groups are a fundamental principle of social communication, social identity, and how we perceive the world. So we always categorize ourselves as being part of a group, depending on the context. So for example, I'm a lecturer, or I'm a husband, I'm a father. And then out-group are people who don't belong to this in-group. So for example, I'm a lecturer, they are the students. I'm a father, they are the children. So in-group, out-groups make us make our life easier to define who we are by creating a contrast between us and others.
Thanks for clarifying that. Now, are there any positive examples of media portrayals of disability then?
Yes, indeed they are. And we need to consider one thing though. Positive portrayals are not the same as positive stereotypes. The positive portrayals should be portrayals that challenge social boundaries. And often filmmakers think that positive stereotypes do exactly that. Remember the supercrip stereotype from the last episode, which is all about emphasizing superhuman strength or willpower because or despite of the disability. And that's a typical positive stereotype, but it still maintains those social boundaries between in and out group and leads to very high expectations of how disabled people should behave. And it leads to an inferiority complex if disabled people realize they cannot match those high expectations. So positive portrayals need to go beyond these kind of positive stereotypes. One main feature of positive portrayals in media is when the story does not focus on the disability. It focuses on other aspects of that human being which are not related to the disability and aspects with which non-disabled people can easily identify with. Now, this doesn't mean that the disability should be intentionally hidden or ignored, but it should also not become such a strong focus, because if that's the case, if there's too much focus on the disability, it will become a pure spectacle. Let's have a look at a great example called The Specials. The Specials was a reality TV series about five friends with intellectual disabilities living together in a house in Brighton. The series' main strategy is to look at the everyday lives of the characters without making their disabilities the center of the story. And that included their love lives, relationship dynamics, adolescence issues, work, bickering about house chores, a lot of different things. So the characters don't function through their disability, but through many other character traits and life events, rather than all being connected to the disability. So we have complex and multi-layered characters that do not fit into the stereotypical views audiences have about people with special needs. And we call these rounded characters. They are multi-layered. They are not flat characters. And what is even more important is that all these everyday activities we see are very similar to activities non-disabled people usually do. So non-disabled audiences can connect with the characters emotionally. They can feel empathy. And their disability is neither foregrounded nor pushed into the background. It's simply there as part of their everyday life, sometimes more obvious and sometimes less obvious.
Now, even though the specials doesn't focus on disability, it's still a show focusing on disabled characters, which is why it was even called the specials. So what about films where disability is not even an issue, but is simply just there?
Yes, you're right. Apart from focusing on rounded characters and everyday life, what's also missing in media are disabled people in contexts in which the disability is purely incidental. So it's simply there. Why not, for example, show people who happen to be disabled, but the disability is not essential at all for the story or the context? A great example is Lucy Martin, the BBC weather presenter who has no right forearm. She's brilliant in the way she announces the weather. And her missing limb, even though obvious, is no inhibition to her presenting the weather. And more so, her disability has absolutely no relation to what she's saying or to the context of weather forecasting. And she was certainly not hired because of the disability, but regardless of it. Another example is the BBC series Africa with Adi Adepitan, presented by Adi Adepitan, a black wheelchair user. His disability is permanently visible in the show, but it has very little bearing on him exploring different African countries and cultures. And what's interesting is that he's black and originally Nigerian, and this is far more significant for the BBC to break the stereotype of white Western presenters exploring African cultures. So the disability in this context becomes even more insignificant because his blackness is a much more important factor. There's also a good example in the TV drama Dexter about a serial killer, where a sketch artist in a murder case is incidentally a wheelchair user. It is a very short scene and we never see the character again, but it is exactly these kind of little touches where disability can be shown in non-stereotypical ways, which can reduce social stigma. And although all these are exceptions, they do increase the visibility of disabled people without reinforcing stereotypes.
But couldn't you argue that because these kinds of portrayals of incidental disability are so rare, that they stand out like a sore thumb for an audience, though?
Yes, that's very true. And because the audience is so used to disability featuring a story, when they see disability in a more marginal function, they may start thinking about the significance and how it relates to the story. So in a way, the insignificance of the disability in the examples I mentioned would make it significant in the first place simply because we are not used to seeing such representations. It could even become obvious to an audience that this is a very deliberate and activist strategy by the filmmakers to break disability stereotypes. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, as it may make the audience question their own prejudices and think about representation in general. But I think the more shows and films do these kind of things, the more we become used to many different representations, some in which disability is significant, some in which it is not. And this can lead to seeing disabled people not as the other of the outgroup, but as normal members of a diverse society. And that's why I also want to see more disabled people as major characters embedded into fiction stories without their disability having a necessary narrative function. I've recently attended an event about disability representation and inclusion in film and media hosted by the BFI, the British Film Institute. And one speaker quoted a disabled media person, I forgot his name, but he was saying something really, really interesting. He was saying that we have had our Sidney Poitier, but we haven't had our Denzel Washington yet. And I think this quote is brilliant because it draws a great analogy between the representation of disability and the representation of black people in media. So basically, Sidney Poitier was the first black Hollywood actor to get major character roles in Hollywood films, which in the 1960s was a very big leap for a white Hollywood industry. However, in his first major roles, he played characters who had to be black because the color had a major function in the story. And more than 30 years later, we have now Denzel Washington being cast in many films like Philadelphia or Flight, not because of his black skin color, but because he's an established actor. And in these films, his black skin is purely incidental. It has no relation to the story. So when it comes to disability portrayal in media, it is true that times have changed and we see much more disabled people in films and TV shows, but mostly they are portrayed like Sidney Poitier. They are there because of their disability. It's still very rare to find Denzel Washingtons, that is, disabled people who play characters or feature in stories not because of, but despite their disability. So the disability is incidental.
Are there not any examples then?
In fiction films, I can't think of any example where the disability is incidental because fiction films are very narrative-driven examples where the stories and the characters are very functional for the plots, and they're very structured storylines, and all the character traits need to relate to the plots in order to create emotions. So apart from Dexter with the wheelchair user, the sketch artist, I hardly can think of any examples where disability is incidental in fiction films. So a rare example in TV drama, which is a fiction series, is the German TV series that I mentioned last time called Die Heiland, which is about a blind lawyer. And the blindness there is mostly incidental, so it often plays no major role in how the bad guys are caught or in her work as a lawyer. And it's based on a real case, and maybe that's why it's much more realistic and not reduced to the disability.
Right, well, coming back to reality TV series, you have those that focus exclusively on disabled people or people with special needs. What do you think about these then?
Yes, I call these ghetto strands. And one strategy for positive portrayals is to avoid these kind of ghetto strands that categorize disabled people. So this kind of ghettoization has been quite common in documentary or reality TV series. So running shows like The Undateables or Extraordinary People keep emphasizing the disability of their characters through stereotypes, which of course maintains social boundaries and stigma. For instance, The Undateables is about disabled people taking part in blind dates and matchmaking, and they are portrayed in a quite patronizing, oversweetened way as if they were children. So in a previous episode, I mentioned that prejudices against disabled people are often paternalistic. So non-disabled people often see disabled people in the same way as they see children, vulnerable, helpless, and somebody who needs pity and care. And by the way, this also happens a lot with other stigmatized groups, such as obese people. So we have a lot of reality TV shows, like I Used to Be Fat, for instance, where obese people are treated in very similar ways. So in these kind of shows, stereotypes are used to create a spectacle out of the difference between the in and out group and display them as some kind of freaks. So the solution to this is to have disabled characters mingled with non-disabled characters in shows that are not really about the disability. shows that don't emphasize the bodily or mental differences. Take, for example, Britain's Missing Top Model, which was a reality TV show about disabled models competing against each other, and all contestants had some kind of disability, and the show focused on that. Now, in contrast to that show, we have America's Next Top Model, Cycle 22, where we have a deaf participant mixed with other non-disabled participants, and he actually won the competition.
But surely there are media examples that do put a significant focus on disability, but they're not stereotypical. There must be, surely.
Yes, there are a few, but I think it's a very difficult balance to achieve. And I think the writers and the producers really need to have a good grasp about representation, about disability in media in general. One strategy here is irony and ambiguity. For instance, if we look at Michael J. Fox's character in The Good Wife, the TV drama about lawyers. He plays a lawyer with Parkinson's disease who often clashes with the main character of the show, who is an aspiring female lawyer. And throughout the series, the character becomes quite rounded. At times, his disability is really obvious, but in an ironic way. So, for example, during a court case, he uses his disability and the medication he's taking to influence the jury to win a case. So here we have a case of irony, but in other episodes, his disability is just visible but not really important for the story. And more importantly, his character switches between being antagonistic and friendly towards the main character. So sometimes he's the good guy, sometimes he's the bad guy. And this kind of ambiguity is a good thing because ambiguity defies stereotypes. Remember, stereotypes are very simple and very binary, either good or bad, and ambiguity defies that. So Michael J. Fox's character does not easily fit into any disability stereotypes. And there's another good example at the moment, the BBC series Jerk, which is a black comedy series focusing on a man with cerebral palsy who tries to use his condition to his advantage. But in any case, I'm not saying that there should be no films or TV shows focusing on disability. Of course there should, but there should also be alternative portrayals that do not feature the disability as either something to be overcome or something to be celebrated or something in any way central to the story. We need this kind of pluralism of representations that are in between the two polar opposites of the superscript stereotype and the pathetic character stereotype. We need more nuances, we need more rounded characters, and we need more ambiguity so that disabled people can't be easily squeezed into very simplistic stereotype templates.
If you'd like to keep up on previous episodes of this series, just head to Audio Boom, which is online. Head for that. Search for RNIB Podcasts, and if you search for Breaking Blind Stereotypes, you will find this series there. In the meantime, Dr. Catalin Brilla, it's always so interesting chatting with you. Look forward to our next episode.
Thank you very much, Simon. Me too.